What's up, well, that's good fam. I am so excited. I'm always excited, especially for Wednesdays, because I love getting to interview great people. And today I'm going to interview someone that I'm actually personally a huge fan of. And if you're not, you probably are, you just don't even know it. So this is Ryan O'Neill from Sleeping At Last. He has an incredible podcast. He's had music that you've probably heard, whether it's on Grey's Anatomy, Twilight, The Ellen Show, like so many places, it's everywhere. But he's just an incredible person. He's a husband and a father to two girls, and I'm excited to have him on the show. So welcome, Ryan, to the What's Good podcast.
Hi there. Thank you so much. Seriously, I'm so excited to talk to you.
Yes, we are so excited to. I say we, I kind of always talk as we, which is funny because people are like, who's the, where's the we? And mostly it's like my husband or my team. But in this case, it's actually like everybody who listens to the podcast. I know I'll be excited to have you on. Well, I have to ask you the hardest question ever. What is the best piece of advice that you've ever been given?
Oh, gosh. Okay. So I think the best piece of advice I've been given, or the one that that stood out in my mind as I was trying to figure out my answer for this question, was from Bob Goff, who I know is a mutual friend of ours.
Yes.
And right at the time we had our firstborn, so I have two daughters, Lily and Iris. Lily's six, so about 6 years ago, I was in the kind of the haze of being a new dad, and I was talking to him and was basically just saying like, I'm having a hard time like being present and just like, just being, you know, like I'm so tired and I'm so exhausted. Yeah. And he was like, what if you had a magnifying glass and you just continued to look for your daughter's fingerprints everywhere that, like every day. And so a couple of weeks later, he sends me a magnifying glass. And so to me, what that means is just to notice the beauty of it, of today, and the beauty of getting to show the world to my little girl. And so I now have a little collection of magnifying glasses as reminders of those, of that message. So I don't know if it's advice, but it's a perspective
good.
That helps me notice.
That's so good. Here you are right before we started. He's like, oh, this question's so intimidating. But I mean, that was so good. And if you have a collection, that seems to be a pretty significant advice to you. I love that.
Absolutely.
We just had our first daughter and our
congratulations,
first, and she's a girl.
Seriously, so thank excited.
You. Thank you. We're
How
so
old is she
excited.
Now?
She's only 2 months. So she's still just a little boo. I know.
That's so special.
We are obsessed. So it's just cool to hear your perspective of, you know, your daughter is kind of changing your perspective on the daily basis, because she's already changing ours for sure.
Oh, I am sure. It's like it's a week to week thing. Like,
yes.
Like each week is so different from the last week. And then, like your perspective on every part of life is shifting throughout their whole life. And that's so special, you know?
It is so true. I know when people have said to me, they're like, do you feel normal? Like my friends, because they haven't had kids yet. Do you feel normal? I'm like, well, yeah, like I feel like a normal person, but I feel like a better version of myself. Like things that like I struggle with that were just like so insignificant, you know, I just feel like have fallen
shifter,
off of
right?
me. Cause yeah, I'm like, wow, my life is so much bigger than myself. And I always knew that, but having her as that reminder is amazing.
That's so beautiful.
So you are an artist. You write songs, you sing them. I think you also play many instruments. You have a very creative brain. And like I kind of mentioned, your music has been heard on Grey's Anatomy, on the Twilight Saga, on all these really big things. And I know there's so many more. I saw Jane the Virgin too, which my family really liked that show. So that was really cool.
Oh, that's awesome.
But what does that feel like for, you know, you to sit in your home and write a song and then one day hear it on the big screen? Because for me, and this is such a smaller scale, but even just like, you know, you write a book like by yourself and then all of a sudden like everybody's reading it, you know? So what does that feel like for you to write something and then all of a sudden it's just like out there?
Yeah. First of all, writing a book sounds so huge to me. Like I can't imagine, like with a song, I'm writing, you know, maybe 20 lines, and you know, a book is full of 100 and something pages. But anyway, so I grew up just kind of in love with that art form. And, obviously I fell deeply in love with music. And so to be able to see those things kind of come together is really, really special. The first time I ever had a song in a TV show, it was this live action version of Tarzan. this is a long
so
time ago.
Cool.
And I don't know that it ran very long, but it is like, you know, I gathered my family up together. We all sat and tried to hear when the song was playing, and it was so quiet in the background that I couldn't even tell it was my song. And so from that moment on, it's been like this, even that was special, you know?
Wow, that's so cool.
So I really geek out whenever I have that privilege or opportunity. It's really special.
That's amazing. Do you feel like, I know you love the movies and you say like it's so cool for that, do you feel like you write your songs for that, or do you have like a specific thing that you write for, or is every project different?
So I started a while ago writing in theme, which is kind of a creative hack, because basically for me, it allows me to, like, if I know in my Atlas project, like I have a long form series called Atlas that it's this very thematic music, and I have the song titles already written before any of the music comes at all. And so it's really fun to have a jumping off point, you know, like I'm going to write a song called Sorrow, you know, like it can't be super happy. Like there's some really like instantly like limiting in a creative way, in a really helpful creative way. It instantly gives me a framework to work within. And so I never really write unless I have an opportunity to write specifically for a movie. Like for Twilight, I actually wrote Turning Page, like after reading the books and trying to submit it for the film. So I also knew that there was a very slim chance of me getting that song in the movie. So I wanted to make sure that if it didn't make it, it still was like a meaningful love song to me and my wife.
Yeah.
So it wasn't fully Edward and Bella vampire song, but yeah. So on occasion, like if it's for a specific project, I will write very much with film and TV in mind. But all of my normal songs that get used in film and TV were written just because music's my therapy. I process everything through it. I even like my girls growing up, I was just thinking about it. Like I have little snippets of their life kind of interwoven into each of the songs in the last 6 years.
Wow.
And so it's even helping me like process time and memory. And
that is the coolest
thing. So usually that's
thing.
My jumping off point. Yeah.
That is the coolest thing ever. It seems to be that way. It's like whenever you write for something specific, it's good. But then the moments that come out of the really just raw organic moments of life are the ones that end up touching people in the sweetest ways.
Yeah.
You know?
Awesome. That's totally true. Thank you. Yeah. I kind of balance the two where it's like a blank canvas for me is the scariest thing in the world.
Yeah.
If you're just like, hey, would you write a song? Any song, it doesn't matter what it's about, just write it. Like that sounds so exciting. And then all of a sudden my mind just kind of breaks.
Oh yeah. No,
so
I get that.
I lay out these like thematic, like, all right, I'm going to write a song for the five senses. All right. So that's, you know, touch, taste. I'm going to write a song for each of the planets in our solar system. I'm going to, you know, like that kind of stuff helps me. Like all of those little details, my research into each thing, kind of feeds back into my creative process. And
that's
really
cool.
Fun that way.
I feel the exact same way when I have to do something, if I like, especially in writing. I don't know if you've ever watched SpongeBob, but there's this scene in SpongeBob where he's like literally up for hours. He has to write this paper and he's like so stressed because he doesn't know what to say. And you see him just like working away. And then finally you see what he wrote and it was, and sometimes I feel like that. I'm like trying to get a start and I'm like,
that literally is the entire writing process right there, right?
It's so true. It's so true. Y'all know I love a good story. I love hearing about a story, listening to a story, and there are so many unforgettable stories and characters out there, and Audible is here to help you discover all of them. Audible is the home of storytelling and lets you enjoy all of your audio entertainment in one simple, convenient app. They offer an amazing selection of audiobooks from every genre, like bestsellers, new releases, memoirs, mysteries, business, and more. There's always something new to discover along with your old favorites. If you're a thrill seeker, Audible is the place for you. Their selection of mystery and thriller titles, plus highly anticipated new releases, will keep your heart racing month after month. And Audible's next listen recommendation means that there's always something that you'll love at your fingertips. Audible members get full access to a growing selection of included audiobooks, Audible originals, and even podcasts. You can download or stream them wherever you would like and whenever you would like. Plus, members can pick one title every month from the entire catalog to keep. With thousands of titles, you'll definitely find something you love all in one convenient app so that you can listen anywhere, anytime. So if you're into the whole crime mystery thing, my sister actually just told me about a title called The Last Thing He Told Me by Laura Dave. And I gotta be honest, I'm not really into these kind of things because I get too scared too easily. And she was like, no, it will not scare you. You will love it. You'll be so into it. So I guess that's gonna be my next listen. So new members can try Audible now for free for 30 days. Visit audible.com/woah or text woah, W-H-O-A to 500-500. That's audible, A-U-D-I-B-L-E .com/woah or just text woah to 500-500 to try Audible for free for 30 days. Go check it out, friends. Well, you mentioned your Atlas journey, and that has been just such a cool thing to follow along in bits and pieces of it.
Oh, thanks.
One thing that I'm really inspired by you is how you take your time with a project. And I feel like nowadays people want to just get something out fast. You know, it's like, you know, as soon as we can get out, we just put it out. And you've really taken your time on things, especially, which we're going to talk about later, the Enneagram. Like, you put out one, and then you didn't really know when the next one was coming out for the listener.
No idea,
we were all, like, refreshing. And, you know, that's really cool, though, because you took your time. What
Thank you.
Like, how have you seen that benefit you and your projects taking time? And when do you know that it's ready? Because that would be hard. Like,
you know,
you could always work on something, but when do you just say, okay, it's good. Like, go.
Yeah. Oh, goodness. I don't know if I ever really have that feeling of, like, it is 100% done. It's so abstract for me where it's almost like, it's almost when things stop bothering me about the song. It's kind of when I know I'm like, all right, there's nothing I can be mad at right now. You know, like there's no track that's sticking out. And so I think that might be done. I don't have any more ideas to add to it. I've said my, you know, the message came across. And so it's never with like, it's done. And I like go celebrate. I wish I had that. Cause that would be so much more fun.
Yeah.
I've had a couple of friends like try to celebrate like the ends of, you know, actually when the Enneagram was done, when I finished those 9 songs, and for me, it like I knew in my mind that I should be celebrating this, but in my, I could probably work on the same songs forever.
Right.
Like,
yes.
I would torture myself entirely by doing that. And I would live a very unhappy life if I let myself do that. But I do have that like perfectionistic idea in my head where it's like, it's never actually done, but I do have to let go of it at some point. And that letting go process it's like this very ephemeral, like actually I just finished a song, for the third chapter of my Atlas series. And it's been a little while since I've worked on it because I took a little bit of time off, and even being in tune with what that feeling is I'm just out of whack. So it took me weeks of listening and just trying to like, I would show up to the studio and just sit like with it on repeat and just not knowing, like, I don't even know what I'm supposed to be doing. Like, am I supposed to be adding things? Am I supposed to be closing it out? Like, I don't like, so I, it's a funny process, but you asked, more specifically about like taking time with the songs, and it's similar to, writing with like a prompt or a creative like theme and versus like just being free with it. I find that like, there's an exact balance that I have not figured out where I want to make sure that I can take enough time to get it right, but at the same time, not too much time with a project or with a song to start like letting in the doubt and the insecurities and letting all of those questions kind of have a louder voice. So that's been tricky. And I think I actually kind of fumbled a little bit on this last song because I had too much time with it.
Yeah,
like it's the first song of a big project. And I just was like, nobody's waiting for it yet. I'm kind of, you know, I haven't released an announced or I haven't announced like the release date. And so, that in my head just created, like, I could work on it for a couple years and, I will get increasingly more unhappy if I do. So,
it's a balance. I think that's good advice for people though, because I've seen that perfectionism kind of keep people from actually putting things out that either God put on their heart, they've been working really hard on. And it's like, no, like put it out. That's going to touch people. But it's like, oh, but there's this. And like, nobody would notice the this, like everybody
would be
inspired by the thing that you put out. But we get in our minds, we're like, it's not good enough. It's not this, it's not that, whatever. But that's good advice of like, you know, take your time with things, like, you know, steward what you have well, but then don't sit on it too long that you start getting insecure and you start writing a whole nother story and then just ditch it. And you're like, nobody ever sees it. You know?
Yeah. And then all of a sudden you can't appreciate. I do feel that way even with releasing it. Like, so not even just finishing it, but actually making sure people get to hear it. Cause if you hold something too long, I found for my music, like you've kind of grown a little bit in a year or in 6 months. And so I really like the idea of as soon as I'm finished with something, that it can be received pretty quickly after that. And so I don't usually follow like the traditional PR plan of like, you know, prep for months and months and, you know, have a campaign going around it. I love the idea of like, as soon as it's out of the oven, it can be enjoyed.
Yeah, that's awesome. Hey, eat it while it's hot.
These warm little cookies.
That's right.
Exactly.
It's always better right out of the oven. That's awesome. I love that.
I heard somebody say, I can't remember who it was, and it kind of haunted me for the last 10 years. But you get to a certain part or a certain point in your creative process where you're spending 98% of your time making it 2% better.
Wow.
And that's a dangerous place to be. And I feel like I'm there often where I'm like,
wow,
tweaking, you know, like the EQ on a guitar or something, something that nobody will hear or care about, but something about it is bothering me or not sitting right. And I'm spending, you know, all of my time trying to make it, you know, 2% better. So that's a wrestling that I can't totally like, cause part of me feels like, well, if you can get the 2% better, then do whatever it takes to do that. And then the other part of me is like, that's not actually how creativity should work. You know, you shouldn't be, we're not aiming for perfection. We're aiming for true, you know, communication of what we feel and think.
Yes.
And so
that's so true.
It's haunted me. So I will now let it haunt you.
Oh yeah, no, now I'm like, okay, great. Yeah. Thank you. Well, it's actually so good because I am finishing a book project right now. And it is that.
Are you?
Like, yeah, it's like, why do I?
Oh my gosh, as a brand new mom too, that's so much. Are you doing all right?
It has been literally crazy. Thanks for asking.
That's so hard.
Yes, I'm almost done, which is so great. But that
Congrats,
is really good
awesome.
Advice for me right now. And I have to remember too, it's like perfection isn't actually relatable, you know? So
yeah, it's not relatable and it's not even reasonable.
No, it's really not. And so it's like when you get to a point where you're like, this is going to move people, this is going to change people, inspire people, then it's done. You know, it's time.
Totally.
And so
totally.
So
and
cool.
I do feel like the feeling, like you as an author, the feeling that like your feelings about the book, I feel like influence how people receive it. So even though it
true.
Might be on like a social media post, it might be on your podcast, however, but I do feel like letting it go at a time when you feel really at peace with it versus, I mean, at least I'm speaking from my experience.
No,
if I let
so
it go
true.
Too late, it like I'm kind of making excuses for it in my head. Like, well, that was a year ago. I know I can do better now. I would change this. I would change that.
Yep.
Like there's some danger in holding on. Yeah.
Very true. So I know you're a Christian, you have faith. In what ways has, you know, your music even brought you closer to God? Do you feel like it's strengthened your faith? Do you feel like it's been there at times for you when your faith, you know, you've had doubts, or how has that kind of played a role in that?
Yeah, it's a place for me to process my faith. So all of my questions, I think somehow I don't ever intend for it to happen. And I've had this rule actually since I think I was like 15 years old, just starting out writing songs. And for some reason, like the idea of like, oh, what kind of music am I going to write? Mm-hmm. And how does my experience of my faith, like what role does that play in my music?
Yeah.
And the rule was basically, I will never force my faith into my music and I'll never force it out. And so that has naturally created this place for me to process and, kind of work out my questions. And so you can kind of probably trace it back. My rising and falling in my faith throughout my music. And so, in that way, like it helps me to stay in tune with it.
Yeah.
And that's like it's an area that I really love writing about and writing like music gives me a place to put those questions out into the world.
That's very cool. I love it. You're so creative. It's like, I'm like, I want to think like that. Like I want to like process things like that, but you welcome us into that processing. And I love
that's
how,
so sweet. Thank you.
You know, I've followed the Enneagram one so closely and it's just really cool because you don't just put it out. You've explained why and the why. I love the why because I'm such a big, like, I want to hear the story behind it, you know? That's why
that's
I ask
so cool
people
to hear,
the best piece of advice you've ever been given. Because I'm like, you give advice, you do all this stuff, but like, who told you something that inspired you? And it gives a glimpse of your story. And so
awesome.
To hear the background was super, super cool for all those. You were so intentional. I think that's the word for your careers, like when from an outsider, is like intentional. Intentionality and not a lot
That's
of people
so nice. Thank you.
Use that. So it's awesome. Well, I want to do something fun. I want to have a Enneagram combo, if you're down for it.
Oh, I'd love it.
But I have to invite my Enneagram geek into the picture, and that is my brother, John Luke.
That's great.
For those people who don't know what the Enneagram is, and you're about to hear us say 6 and 7 and 9 and 1 and all the different numbers, can you give people a little snapshot of what the Enneagram is and why you like it, why you got into it?
Yeah, I'll try. So the Enneagram is made up of 9 distinct and kind of uniquely beautiful types of personality. And the model assumes that each type has sort of a core wound, something that could be perceived or something that actually happened in childhood. And it really shapes your struggles and your successes throughout your whole life. And so it's 1 through 9, and each one has a deep need. And it's just a really helpful tool to understand not only yourself, but each other, and how certain things are just so much more important and so much more painful for each type. And understanding that, just knowing that there's this kind of map out there, it makes conversation, it makes relationships, it makes all of those things enriched with empathy in a way that no other really tool that I've ever come across. So for me, the Enneagram has been a tool for empathy and understanding myself better, but also understanding how to love the people that I love better.
Awesome. That was very good.
I don't actually know if that is an overview or if that's just...
that's your perspective. I think that's a very great overview. So I am a 6. So if you go to me and unhealth...
You were 6? Oh my gosh. Okay.
Yes. So when you were talking about the like... in my head, like, did I open the door right? I'm like, that is so me. Like, I will say like one thing. I'm like, did I say that wrong? Should I have done that? And Christian's like, what are you talking about? Like, you literally opened the door.
Yeah,
what, like,
you're a person opening a door.
I know. Okay, so I get it.
It is. I relate to that hardcore. And it is, I feel like I saw, somebody sent me, I'm sure it was some sort of meme, that was basically like, if you want to know what my whole life feels like, it's just rehearsing normal everyday activities and how they went and rating them, you know, 1 through 10. That's my mind.
That is so true. I try to get out of that, but that is real. That's the real. Okay. So before we start, we have to share with everyone what Enneagram numbers we are. So yes. Ryan, what are you?
I identify as a type 9, and I'm 100% a 9.
Do you have
hardcore 9? Yeah.
Do you wing one way or another?
I didn't think I did, but I do feel like I've got a lot more 1 than I realized, and that I think a lot of what we talked about already, even the creative process, that's where it comes out.
Yeah.
And actually, I didn't also realize until I wrote my song for the type 8, I was like, oh, I don't have any fight in me. I've got no like strength in that way that an 8 does. And writing that song and kind of like thinking through my life, even as a songwriter, there's a stubborn, not to you know, say that 8s are stubborn, but there is a confidence in some of my creative process in moments where I'm like, oh, that must be my 8 wing.
Yeah, like, that's awesome.
Thank goodness it showed up, because
you're like,
you
it's
know,
there, right?
Yeah, it's there, but it is, I would say it's a very mild 8 wing and a pretty, a more prominent 1 wing than I realized.
Yep, that makes sense.
And how about you guys?
Okay, John.
So you're a type 6.
Okay, yes.
Well, I'm a 6 strong wing 7 for sure. Everybody's okay. Like, you're not a 6 or 7, but like, if you, like, I know myself, and like, whenever I listen to the podcast, whenever I read the books, it's like, no doubt. I just struggle more with the things that the 6 struggle with, but I have more of a 7 personality, I feel like.
That's awesome.
Yeah, and this is funny, because I went back and forth, which... I don't know. Did you test a 9 when you took the test?
It's funny. I think I did. And then through the help of my friend, Chris, who wrote the book, The Sacred Enneagram, he recommended, he's like, you know, the tests are really helpful to kind of narrow things down to like, you know, a third of the Enneagram that you might, you know, relate to. But really, you just got to dive in deep and read more about it.
It's
and so I don't think there was any question that I was a 9 until writing the songs.
Really?
Each of the Enneagram songs, I started with 1. And so I started realizing that like, I was reading and having conversations so intently about each type that there is a part where I'm like, maybe I'm a 1.
Yeah.
Maybe I'm a 2. Maybe I'm a 3.
That is so funny.
So like the entire time, which is the most 9 thing ever. I'm just like merging into every type as I go, you know?
Well, that was one of my questions I was going to ask, is if you went on an Enneagram journey, because I'm a 6 wing 7, but I go back and forth because I tested a 7 twice. But when I read it all, I'm like, gosh, like there's no, like sevens don't think this much because this guy, he is a...
No thinking whatsoever.
Like strong seven.
That's great.
No.
Yeah.
Yes, I am...
Zero thinking.
No thinking.
Zero thought. Is that what you're saying?
So yeah. you're no. a seven? You identify as seven?
Definitely 100% seven.
Like never guess.
That's great.
No, no doubt in my mind. Whenever, like I took the test, always got seven and I was like, I don't know. And then I read... You know, I would read the description like, this is exactly me.
Oh, that's awesome.
Yeah.
I've said this before, and it sounds like I'm just saying it, but if I could transform myself into a type, it would be a seven.
I know, right?
It is a more efficient way to be. Like, you've prioritized, like, sure, if pain is the thing you're avoiding, if that's the kind of the crutch of the seven, That's not a bad thing to avoid.
Yeah, I know, great. Right?
Like the need for the nine is to just like it. Literally, I think Father Richard Rohr says the need for the nine is to just avoid. Just avoid it all. Yeah, and so to avoid pain, that seems pretty efficient. And then the rest of the time, you're just having a great time. You know,
that's like, very reasonable.
That's what everyone says about the seven. Is like the seven is like everyone wants to be the seven, and that. Richard Rohr's book, he said it perfectly. He was like, a seven will never turn down a cookie. And I was like, that's me. And I'm like, everyone wants to be a seven.
Apparently, I've got some seven in me too then, because I won't turn down a cookie.
But everyone wants to be a seven because you ride so high and then you crash. And that's the thing about the sevens.
That's true.
So we got
that's
high highs and low lows.
But not everybody sees the low lows. Yeah.
Disney World is that way. High highs and low lows. That's what every time we go there with like any sort of other family, we're like, just so you know, like the highs are going to be amazing. The lows are going to be pretty rough. Disney World is a seven. It's a seven place, right?
Are you a big Disney World person?
I am more than I probably should even admit. Yeah, I grew up going pretty frequently, and now with kids, it's like it really is like a seeing everything from a new perspective, and I just love it. So it's like
that's awesome.
I joke around that I'm going through my midlife crisis by like my deep love of Disney right now.
That's awesome. Well, you're really gonna think this is cool. I have to share this with you. So my grandparents, it's their 50th wedding anniversary this year. And 50 years ago, they went to Disney World on their anniversary. And it was the year that it opened. So this year is the 50th. So all of our families go to Disney World for their 50th and Disney's 50th anniversary.
Are you serious?
Which
that's
is pretty
amazing,
cool.
That's in October, right? Because I'm much of a nerd where I know that.
That's amazing. That they went, you know, that when they got married, that's just so cool.
How cool
50
is
years
that?
Ago when it first opened, and now we're going back 50 years later. It's pretty awesome.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah,
have they been back several times in
yes,
the 50 years?
They've been back.
That must be amazing to actually have seen the developments.
The growth.
And,
I know, right?
That's
yeah,
so
you'll
cool.
have to
so
talk
cool.
to them. You would love it.
I would love that.
Well, that's so cool. So I was going to ask you, what was I going to ask
Wait,
you?
Wait, I have a question.
Oh, yeah, please
okay.
ask.
So first I want to say, with Atlas and the Enneagram, I was like so worried when you were, like when the numbers were coming out, waiting for the seven, because I feel like a lot of people don't really understand like what a seven is, and they just see like
totally,
the happy,
totally.
The joy, the whatever. And I thought you hit it perfectly on like the hopeful optimism, but also like the sadness mixed in, but then the like the joy that it brings. And I felt like that is just so me and so what a
Dude,
seven
that,
is.
That means seriously, that means so much to me to hear that, because I was terrified. Like each of the songs, but like I think I realized at the very start of the project that I don't know what I bit off. Like this is like ridiculous, because at first it just sounded like really fun creatively. Like I'm gonna write songs about these interesting versions of being a person. That's great. That'll be super fun. And then realizing how sensitive that is, and how unfairly a lot of the Enneagram types are represented, the eights and sevens, I would say more specifically, and sixes too, actually.
I was going to say, maybe, actually.
I might even put them right at the top of being under appreciated in all of the writing of the Enneagram. I don't know if you felt that way, but.
Oh, for sure. It was super helpful whenever I listened to it, which honestly, like it was just really beautiful, because whenever my friend group was listening to it all together, and everyone in my office that I used to live in Nashville and worked in an office there, and we were all listening to them together. And like, we knew which one we were by which one we cried the most to. Like, it's like, that's your
so
number.
Nice.
But it was so empathetic. Uh-huh. And it was funny because I remember when each song came out, it was like that person was nervous to come into the office because they're like, I'm exposed. Everyone knows me. But it was like so beautiful. And the six,
so
like
cool.
Something that I feel like everybody thinks about six is like, they're just afraid of everything. And they're just like timid and scared and overthink everything. And like, yeah, but that's not the thing that we're like super proud of, you know?
No, that's like, it's really pressing into like the wound of the type by people continuing to like explain sixes that way. Yeah.
And I feel like there's other types like sevens where it's like, oh, they're so fun. And like, they're known for like a good thing. But then it's also like, they want to be known for the hard thing. But the six is like, I don't want to just be known for the hard thing. But whenever when you talked about it being like, I choose to believe that I'm a sanctuary. Like the reason why like I fear is out of wanting to protect. Like whenever I think about like all the worst case scenarios, I'm trying to protect everyone around us. Like whenever we were growing up, this is a prime example of me being sick. So he had asthma. So he needed to carry an inhaler. Well, he did not. Yeah, he still has asthma. He wouldn't carry an inhaler. So I carried an inhaler everywhere with me because I was like, if something happens to him, like, and I'm thinking of the worst case scenario, I would carry like Benadryl, even though I didn't have allergic reactions, just in case somebody had an allergic reaction. I would like learn all about what do you do in a tornado? What do you do if this happens? Because like I wanted to be able to protect. But most people are like, oh, you think about the worst case scenario, you're afraid. I'm like, well, yes, I do have fear with that, but it's out of a motive of like, I want security. I want my people to be in a place of security. And so
you
captured that
right?
So great. It is a form of love. Aww. But oh my gosh, like even the opening lines whenever of the sixth song we talked about, I had the most vivid dream last night. I have the craziest dreams when you talked about how I was on my way up to heaven, but I could only look down. I was like, oh my gosh, like I'm telling you, your music, like I'm geeking out right now because it really meant a lot. Like your podcast about the Enneagram meant a lot. You talked about being like super afraid to do it. You feel like you being a nine, in what ways did it help you do it? And what ways did it kind of cripple you in doing it?
Yeah. So the ways that it helped was that I genuinely want to make sense and make peace with the entire Enneagram. So I was going through not as a way, like that was something I learned pretty quickly that like, oh, this project doesn't work if I'm just writing songs like an ode to, you know, like interesting. Sevens do this and eights do that and fives do this. So I really wanted to like, what does it feel like to be a type one? What does it feel like to be a type three? So that was like heaps and heaps of conversations. And there was a point with writing each song that I felt like my heart kind of broke for that type. It was like understanding the wound or understanding the baggage or the heaviness that comes with each version of being a person. And that's when I knew that I had something to say about it. And I felt I had the, cause it, like I said, I was, and this is probably part of my nine-ness as well. But like, once I realized that people were like looking forward to hearing their type song, like to me, I was like, oh no, that's not what I wanted to, oh shoot. I'm just trying to write songs like I did for my song Saturn, like about the planet, you know, like I'm just writing about things. But that was an invitation for me to really learn about the people that I know and love in my life in a way that is, as a little bit of a side note, the Enneagram for me is like, I think the thing that I love the most about it is that it is a shorthand to get people to go deep quick. Yeah. Like I've a few friends that I've been friends with for like 25 years and we talk about all sorts of things, but never to the depth that I learned about them in like just asking them questions about being a type five or being a type two or whatever it was. And so that in that sense, it's just a huge gift. Like I feel like the Enneagram is such a beautiful shorthand for going deeper quicker. And, but yeah, so the ways that being a nine helped, I think, is because I came at it, I wasn't trying to solve any problems. I was just trying to honor and appreciate each person, which I think comes maybe from that peacemaking perspective. The negatives is that I genuinely at multiple points thought I was each of those types. And my wife was even being like, you've been like, you're, you're changing a little bit as you're writing these songs.
Right.
So yes. I was definitely like mirroring and kind of merging into each thing that I was going deep into. So that's kind of also when I knew I'm like, I need to move on to the next one.
Yes, that's cool. Yeah. What do you feel like the Enneagram in doing this project, you know, working with each different type so closely, because you had such significant things in each song from that type, or sounds or whatever it was.
Yeah.
What did it teach you about like humanity as a whole? Do you feel like you stepped away and you thought more about the way that people are?
I definitely did. I like a thing that I and this has actually been learning that I see in faith, and I see in like, I've been kind of going deep into a thing called spiral dynamics a little bit lately, just as I just geek out with this stuff. And really, it does seem like the best of people, what it points to, and the Enneagram included, is that we are at our best when we're letting go. Mm-hmm. And the Enneagram, every single type, if you go through 1 through 9, that is really the answer. That's the solution. Like the 8s want control, which is why they're guarded. And so letting go is this beautiful vulnerability for the 8. The 6 want control, for they want security, they want safety. And the answer is letting go and honoring those feelings. And so I think I came away from that project, including writing my 9 song, which was by far the trickiest for me. Sure. Totally, the entire time was like, oh, the 9 song will be easy because it'll just be like any song that I write because I'm a 9.
You know, like,
I've been writing 9 songs since I was 15. This is great. And in order to do the same, to honor other type 9s in the same way that I tried to for 1 through 8, I needed to dig a lot deeper into my own garbage.
Right.
than I wanted to.
I bet that was hard. Yes. You're like, yeah, do I want to put that out?
It was not fun.
Yeah. Wow.
And what I realized through that was the same thing. It's like, oh, the best version of myself is a form of letting go. And the best version of every Enneagram type is a form of letting go. Spiral dynamics leads to letting go. Like I think faith is that way too. It's at its best. It is a trust, and it's a letting go.
It's very true. Wow. That's so good. That's such good advice in and of itself, you know, cause I think we can get so many times, we get so complex in our own number. Well, no one understands. It's different, you know, but at the core, like, we are all human, and we do all face the same things in life, similar things in life, you know, and to know that there are things. And I think the Bible is cool. Like, it's cool with the Bible because it's like, this is one message for all people, you know, mm-hmm. and it's just very cool that the one message genuinely can touch all people with love and with joy and with peace and with all these things. And so, yes, the Enneagram is divided into numbers, but that doesn't mean that we're all not still human, and that as a collective, letting go is the greatest thing for us, you know?
It totally is. It totally is.
That's very
cool. I was also like, the thing that I really loved about writing those songs and just learning, because I studied with Richard Rohr for a couple. I went to a retreat and I got to like hear him teach on the Enneagram for quite a bit, and that was hugely impactful. This was like a year or two before writing those songs in preparation for it, and so all the writing, it just, I think it ended up making everyone feel so much less different in my mind. Like their perspective made more sense. You know,
that's
like it's.
Cool.
I came away from it kind of feeling like, oh yeah, like that makes total sense why that childhood friend was doing what they were doing.
It
doesn't excuse any hurts or anything like that, but it provides a context that's like, oh yeah, that's like, because even like type ones, like knowing that the inner critic or inner criticism is so strong for them. And that's why maybe they can show a little bit of an edge themselves. Like knowing that is a huge, you know, like,
huge.
You know, it hurts my feelings less when someone's mean to me.
Yes. Now, my husband is in one, and it was funny
because
talk about Enneagram journey. Okay. He's over there. He went from like we thought he was a 2, cause he definitely has 2, and he's very helpful, very servant hearted. So
that's
kind.
Awesome.
Well, he then we were like, I don't know, you're kind of like a strong personality for a 2. Then we're like, and then he's like, well, maybe I'm an 8. Which then the 2 goes through, and we're like, are you unhealthy? But it was just funny. And he's like, maybe an 8. So then we thought he was an 8, and then but we never even read or listened to one. I didn't even really know that many ones. And it's funny how your circle, you sometimes are just one or a couple different types, and didn't really know that many ones close to me. And so I didn't really read about it. And when we read it, we were like, oh my.
Oh.
Gosh,
there it is.
It was so true. And that inner critic, it really is a thing, and just like we all have our things. And so knowing that though is so helpful. You feel like the Enneagram has really helped you in your marriage? Because I feel like it totally has. So John Luke probably can say the same.
Yeah.
Have you both felt that way? Yeah. Like, honestly, for me, it was, so I had heard about the Enneagram, or had learned a little bit about it, through our friend Chris, that, this was maybe 7 years, 6 years ahead of me writing these songs and even thinking that I would want to do that. and I was so skeptical. I just thought like, oh great, another way to reduce the human experience into bite-sized pieces. Like,
right.
How is that helpful? How is that helpful? And the thing that kind of pulled me into it was the idea that like the Enneagram is actually not very fun. Like, people can make it fun, and and there's like exciting elements to it. And there's, you know, it's fun to kind of like poke fun at each other. But really, like, it starts like, you know, your type based on how hurtful that description is.
<You know? laughs> That's
like,
the truth.
Like, the thing that makes you cry is the thing that like, so it's not, and that gave it a little bit more credibility. And then before I knew it, like, the language that my wife and I shared, her name's Kate. And it has been this huge, so she's a type 3 and I'm a type 9. Cool. And so understanding that, like, in lesser healthy moments for her, she actually kind of comes to the 9, and so that's not great. Like, I think everybody in marriage is kind of like wired to like, you should be like a little bit more like me, maybe that would be good. And understanding that no, that's actually doesn't, that's not good, don't be more like me, let's go the other way. So when she feels like indecisive or mostly it's indecision, I kind of know where we're at, and that's really, it's just helpful again as a shorthand to, we have found it to be a really beautiful tool in our marriage for 7-8 years. We've been married for 11 years, but
that's awesome.
Familiar with the Enneagram.
It is such a good tool. I love how you said that, because that is how I knew it wasn't a 7. Cause when I read it, I was like, yes, that's awesome.
That's so great.
And then I read the 6, I was like, oh, that's me, you know, cause I'm really so not true. Scared of pain. I enjoy hard conversations, cause I'm like, they make you better. Like, that is not a thing for me. So that's when I knew, like, 7's out. That's not me.
Totally.
But yes, the Enneagram has certainly helped. And just not that we just got married, not even 2 years ago, but it's just been such strength for us, because it helps us understand each other and have compassion and empathy for moments that we don't understand each other. You're like, wait, what? But then you're like, oh, okay, we just think differently.
It's a different value system, right? Like
so
the thing that each of us are trying to, you know, emphasize or avoid, they're very different. And I think it's easy to just assume everybody thinks in a similar way. Parenting too is a huge, I know, like, we definitely believe you're not supposed to type your children, but like, just knowing in the backdrop, I mean, our little girl is 6 and 4, and we will never, we're not going to share with them that we think that they are the types that they are. Sorry, I said 6 and 4 as in their ages.
They're 6 and 4. They are 6
numbers
and
can
4
mean
years
more,
old.
More things than the Enneagram. And, but it helps us to, like, even if we have a little bit of a hunch of what our daughters are, like, it helps us kind of make sure that we're not parenting against that grain, you know, like, we're trying to just pivot a little bit, and that it's helped us in Kate's and my conversations about parenting as we go along. But
that's awesome. That's good advice.
John Luke, did you hear when you realized that you landed on the 7, was it, well, I guess back up a little further. Did you have a lack of interest in the Enneagram at first in general?
Because
I think
really.
No, that's good. Well, then you must be healthy. Because usually 7s are like, no thanks. Like, cool.
Well,
you guys enjoy
kind of
your pain tool.
that was kind of me. And that is true about 7s. But also, it was like kind of getting popular at that time. And that's big 7 thing. I'm like, oh, this is it. I mean, let's learn about it.
Tell me more.
So it was totally that. And whenever it really was with me and Mary Kate, my wife, when we started reading it together, that's when we really settled our number. She's a 2. And early on when we were kind of reading about this and hearing about this. And we had a couple living with us at the time who was big into it. And so they were talking through it with us. And we read this description of like a 2 and a 7. And I mean, it was like they were in our house, like exactly. Like, it was this
who are these
like
spies?
Yeah. It was this like argument about how a 2s and 7s see doing the dishes, and about like 2s feeling like it should be balanced. Like, if you cook, you should like the other person should do the dishes, and me as a 7 thinking, if you cook, you should also do the dishes because like you're the one making the mess. And so it was just this different value system.
Yeah, totally.
Yeah, and we were like, we were both coming at it and like having this major argument for like a year in our marriage about doing the dishes. And then we read this and we're like,
that's good.
This is it. And when you say the Enneagram is a shortcut, that it gave us the language to like actually solve our problem, because we were like, okay, you're a 2, here's how you're coming, here's what you're thinking, I'm a 7, here's what I'm thinking, you know.
That's exactly so cool. It like gives you you know what you know medicine you need for it.
Exactly.
Like, you understand, you're like, I'm hurting, I don't know what to do about that, as opposed to the Enneagram is sort of like, oh, you might be hurting because of this, and I know exactly how to help with that. Yeah,
so true. Jean-Luc pretty much introduced our whole family, because we were on tour whenever it was kind of blowing up. I guess the Enneagram is always, it's been a thing for a while, but it was really popular, at least in our area at the time. And Jean-Luc came on tour, and y'all had the book, like the Wisdom of the Enneagram book or whatever. And Jean-Luc literally drew out on a little dry erase board, remember? He drew out like the triangle, and like he was like, so if you were this, you could do this in health. Like, he literally taught a class like on tour. And we had so much fun. Like you said, it's not fun, but you can make it fun by just getting to know each other, you know?
Oh,
and
absolutely. There are, like, it really is like,
hard moments and like awkward moments, but they're also exciting and funny. Like, that's totally you, like that whole thing. It was fun. Well, I'll just wrap it up with a huge thank you, because this has been so fun. First of all, you're so creative and talented, and I'm thankful that you share all that with the world. Thank you for not sitting on it too long and letting us, you know, get the cookies while they're hot. Seriously.
Oh, that's
everything
so kind.
That you put out is incredible, and I know you're still on the journey of your Atlas. What are you on right now? What are you putting out right now?
So it is, it's going to start, I think, in September is the official start month, and it'll be Atlas 3. So it's a trilogy. So basically Atlas, started with Atlas 1, and it was songs based on like the origins of all things. So I did songs for the concept of darkness kind of before everything. And then I did songs based on light, which is the beginning of everything. And then I went through the planets and, kind of got closer and closer to Earth. And then Atlas 2 is all about involuntary human development. And those songs finished up with the Enneagram, which I like to think of as more involuntary. I do think that the Enneagram, I like to believe that it's hardwired into us, but anyway, the themes that I explore in Atlas 2 are based on involuntary human development. So it's our senses, it's our basic emotions, it's the things that we are born into without much say. And then what I'm currently working on, Atlas 3, is voluntary human development. So it's everything that we do with what we're given. It's all the things that we can do with the gifts and the tools that we have in front of us. So I will do a song for each of the 7 definitions of love, which I'm really excited about in Atlas 3. And so I've been kind of working through that, but it's a trilogy. And I do this because I nerd out on all the themes, and I like, it's like a giant concept album over 70 something songs.
Wow.
But really it's just songs. Just putting songs out there.
No, it is not just songs. That's incredible. I can't wait. Did you say it comes out in September?
Yeah, it starts in September. So the first song, which is called Overture 3/Awake, which is a really catchy title. Nobody will remember it, and
that's awesome. But, hey, we'll remember it. It's gonna be awesome. Well, we're so excited. Thank you again for all that, and just geeking out with us about the Enneagram. You are an incredible person, and your marriage is an inspiration with the things that you shared, and your fatherhood and all the things. So thank you for being on the What's Good podcast.
That's so touching. Thank you so much, guys. Seriously, it was so fun to talk. It was a highlight of my week.